Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am the tech editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
I still have swine flu. I should add that I've recorded this episode directly after another episode, so please don't think that I've had swine flu for like a month, just in case they don't play them sequentially.
Yeah, you better hope they don't play this one first.
Yeah, that would also be very confusing for you guys.
Yes, it will.
But if they do play this one first, trust me, it'll all be worthwhile in the end.
All right.
So let's start off with a little listener mail. Now, by a little listener mail, I mean a lot of listener mail, because I've got two different ones to read.
All right, then.
The first one comes from Terrell, and he says, hey, Jonathan and Chris, I love listening to your podcast on my drive to and from work. It makes being up at 5:30 bearable. Gosh, if only I had something like that. I had a quick question for you. I have no idea if this is a quick little subject or something longer, but something I've always wondered. Why are the keys on a computer keyboard laid out the way they are? I understand that it came from typewriters, but when you look at it and think about it, they just seem to be random letters in arbitrary places. I've been using a keyboard my whole life, so I can type fast without having to look at them without really a problem, but the fact of the matter remains the same. I also remember a couple of years ago hearing about a new keyboard layout that was possibly going to happen, which supposedly would make typing much faster. I was really glad it didn't after using a keyboard for about 2 decades, but it's interesting nonetheless. Anyways, thanks for a great podcast and hope to hear from you. And then here's the second listener mail. This one comes from Chad, a.k.a. Chainsaw. Chainsaw has this to say. Hey there! As I was typing up an email to your rival podcast, Stuff You Should Know, I came up with an idea for your podcast. You see, I don't use a normal QWERTY keyboard. I use a Dvorak keyboard instead, so I thought a podcast on alternative keyboard layouts could be fun. I also seem to remember a keyboard made for gaming that you could buy custom key layouts for that you would swap in and out for each game. From what I remembered, the main advantage of it is that you would only have the keys needed to play the game, so the buttons were bigger and had the action printed right on it. Run, jump, reload, etc. But I can't remember what it was called. The only problem I see with this idea is explaining how the keyboard looks with audio only. Anyways, let me know what you think of the idea. So we're going to do an episode all about baguettes.
Yes.
No, keyboards.
So bread,
keyboards.
How do you
think? We're going to talk about keyboards. That was a long setup for a terrible joke. You know what? Emily's going to write to me about that.
Probably.
Emily, I've got swine flu. Go easy on me. So let's start with the good old-fashioned QWERTY keyboard that
okay.
we all know and love.
I don't loathe the QWERTY keyboard.
Actually, I'm quite proficient at the QWERTY keyboard, so I don't loathe it either. Now, this comes from a design that was patented way back in the 1870s. I thought I had the date, but I just have the 1870s.
I have 1873.
Okay, so... by Christopher Sholes.
Yes. And this was for something called a typewriter.
Yes. Now, the typewriter back in the day was a completely mechanical machine. No electricity. All right.
It's hard to believe that some people listening may not know that, but it is possible that some of you may not have actually ever seen a real, for honest to goodness, typewriter.
I've used them before and they are a challenge. An old one is really kind of rough to use because if the action isn't great on the keys, you have to push really hard to get a good impression.
Yeah, I've got an Underwood at home, actually. It weighs about 700,000 pounds. It is very, very heavy.
Yeah, I can't remember what the brand was. It was what was the other big one besides Underwood?
Remington?
Yes, it was Remington. Remington. That was the one that I used.
Well, that's because Christopher Latham Sholes pitched it to Remington Arms Company.
Yes. So let's talk a little bit about why he decided to lay the keyboard out in this way. First of all, we'll talk about the whole way a typewriter works is that the key is connected to a mechanical arm that when you press down on the key, little levers push the arm up and press it against a ribbon and against a piece of paper, and then you get the letter printed on the page.
Have you ever seen a piece of carbon paper again? Many of you may not have, but basically what it does is as you press, if you put a piece of paper down on the table and put a piece of carbon paper down on top of it and then rub something on it, you'll get a mark when you lift the carbon paper off the paper. It leaves a mark on the paper. Well, that's essentially what the typewriter ribbon is doing. The ribbon moves so that you're not wearing a hole through the ribbon.
Yeah, you would quickly either wear a hole through the ribbon or you'd wear off the ink, essentially.
Yeah, and it's pretty fragile stuff, too, so you don't want to type too many letters in one place on the ribbon. But the typewriter keys on the older style typewriters, and they were in use for, I'm guessing, probably around 100 years, based on 1873 to the IBM Selectric, one of which I also have at home. These little arms would come up, and they each have an individual letter on them. They smack the ribbon and make the mark on the paper. It's actually pretty simple stuff until you get to the, mechanics of – what happens when you start touch typing and not hunting and pecking?
Yeah, so one of the issues here is that if you were a proficient typist and you had the keys laid out in such a way that the most common letters are all under the strongest fingers and you were to type very quickly, you would suddenly start to experience problems with this typewriter. And the problem was that the arms would kind of get entangled. I've actually had this happen with old typewriters where, you're trying to type and then a couple of them stick together and you have to, loosen the two up and then you have to start over again. With the typewriter design that Sholes was working with, it was particularly difficult because where the little arm was hitting the ribbon against the paper, it wasn't in view of the typist. It was actually under a carriage. You had to open the typewriter up to get to that point. So if things jammed up, you would not only have to stop, but you would actually have to essentially remove part of the typewriter in order to fix it.
Yeah, it was actually in your benefit to hunt and peck at that time.
Yeah.
Because the key needed a chance to return to its place after it, typed a letter onto the paper.
So Sholes is, his solution to this problem was a pretty, ingenious one. What's the best way to prevent keys from jamming up? Well, we could redesign the typewriter so that it wasn't using that exact same method. Or, we could try and find some way of clearing each of the arms, but that's a lot of work. Why don't we just put all the keys in different places so that it naturally slows down the typist and puts the most common keys away from me, or common letters away from each other, so that you're not likely to have two arms close together strike at about the same time and then get tangled up.
Yep.
So in other words, bungling it up for the rest of us on purpose so that his machine would work better.
The thing is, though, it doesn't always, because as far as touch typing goes, once you learn the layout of the keyboard, you know, it's a matter of speed and proficiency. So
right.
Once you become proficient, your speed increases anyway.
Well, but the idea here was that if you did keep the most common letters away from each other, then even if you were a faster typist, you weren't likely to have them jam each other because they wouldn't be right next to one another.
Yes. Sidebar number one, I have two. Sidebar number one, my mother used to be a secretary back before they were called admins. And she could type 135 words per minute.
That's fast.
That is very fast. And she, you know, before this electric came out, that'll be sidebar number two. Before this electric came out, and she would type on one of these, QWERTY keyboards on a typewriter with the little arms. And eventually they had to replace her typewriter because the little arms would wear on one another so much that basically they were unusable.
Mm.
And they started wearing into the letters, and that's sort of problematic. Sidebar number two, I guess I'll go ahead and get it out of the way, is
sure.
Just, you know, the other solution to the problem is not the keyboard. Later typewriters used a ball. And it's pretty ingenious actually, because all the letters are, made into the single ball, and you can actually change fonts. It's actually pretty cool because you can change fonts by changing the ball on the typewriter. But what the typewriter does when you press a key, it rotates the ball and smacks the ribbon against the paper for the position of that letter. So if the T is on the side facing you, the typewriter actually has to turn the ball all the way, 180 degrees, hit the paper, and then it returns to its, place. But it also is very, it speeds up for people who are typing, because it is much, much faster, and the key, there are no keys to jam on the other side, and it's a lot more efficient. However, the keyboard is now attached to a computer, and the whole point is sort of moot.
Yeah, so here's the problem, was that the Remington typewriter got really popular.
Yeah.
It became the model that all other typewriters were essentially based off of at least in the English speaking world for quite mm-hmm. some time. And because of that, it meant that we were kind of stuck with the QWERTY keyboard. So even as technology advanced, because people had become so used to the QWERTY keyboard, that became the standard. Even when it became completely a non-factor, where your technology had advanced to the point where you didn't have to worry about keys smashing into each other or arms smashing into each other, or even in the electronic age where you're not even having any moving parts.
Yeah.
Didn't matter, because the QWERTY keyboard had been around so long. For one thing, people had learned to type on the QWERTY keyboard, and to change that would require retraining people to type. They'd have to learn a new way to type on a new keyboard. And that's a big turnoff for a lot of organizations. They don't want to spend the time and money that it would take to retrain people to learn how to type on a different kind of keyboard. Even if you could technically type faster on the new keyboard once you got proficient.
Mm-hmm.
Because it means taking a step back. You're like, well, yeah, I mean, there are more efficient ways to lay out the keyboard, but why would we go through that trouble if this is good enough?
Yeah.
Right? And we've been using it for more than 100 years now. I mean, that's a lot of momentum. Hasn't stopped people from trying.
Nope. And I'm sure you're probably going to start with Dr. August Dvorak.
Oh, I thought it was John C. Dvorak.
No.
I was wondering why you didn't have a key that just said,
"Huh." Oh, seriously.
Anyone who knows who John C. Dvorak is will find that funny, and everyone else will have to go and Google John C. Dvorak and find out why I made a grumpy noise.
Nor is it the composer, Dvorak.
No. So,
Ninth Symphony is awesome.
This Dvorak came up with an alternative keyboard in the 30s, I believe, right?
Yeah, well, apparently, he sort of gained prominence thanks to World War II because they needed more efficient typists.
Mm-hmm.
And from the information I've read, his research indicated that it took 3 years to reach 47 words per minute. 3 years of touch typing on QWERTY keyboards.
Now, granted, these are the old typewriters. Too.
Yeah, yeah. This is pre-Selectric days.
You've got to remember that the pressure that you use to press these keys are in part what determines whether or not your letter makes it onto the page.
Yeah.
Because typing on these old typewriters was a workout. Let me tell you, it's not quite the same as like if you were to take someone. Transport someone from the 1880s who had been used to an old 1880s Remington typewriter and put them on, say, a MacBook Pro, you'd probably wince as they tried to type because you'd be worried that they were going to punch holes through the machine.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I totally derailed you.
No. According to Dvorak, Dr. Dvorak, he said on his keyboard, you could reach that same level of proficiency after just 52 hours.
Wow.
And a Navy study seemed to back him up because it said people using the Dvorak keyboards were 74% faster and they were 68% more accurate.
Well, I have to say, whenever I have a Navy official viewing me, I do tend to type faster.
Okay.
I'm just saying, those guys are – SEALs are scary guys. I'm just saying.
I want to ask you when the last time you had a SEAL watching you type was, but I don't think I want to know.
Well, the last time was at SeaWorld, but that was a totally different kind of SEAL.
Oh, I've been shamooned.
Yeah. Woo! All right. So let's talk a little bit about what Dvorak did to design his keyboard.
Okay.
Like what was he thinking about? And he was thinking about
what
a couple different
things. What were you
thinking? Well, he was thinking more than let's try and space these letters apart so we slow people down. He was concerned with making things easier for typists, not more difficult.
Yeah, that actually, a lot of people think that it was directly for that, but.
Yeah. Well, he was looking mainly at things like how frequently certain letters are used in the English language.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the letters that are used more frequently should be located in ways that are easiest to reach.
Mm-hmm.
The letters that are least frequently used should be put someplace kind of out of the way because, you know, you're not going to have to reach for them that often. And then he also was looking at the physiology of people's fingers. He wanted to see like, okay, well, the strongest fingers should be the ones that are connected to would be typing the most common letters because you don't tire out as quickly. You can go much faster. So that also played a part in it. If you look at a Dvorak keyboard, I mean, it looks pretty much the same as a QWERTY keyboard. It's just the letters are all in different places than what you're used to, except for like the A. The A button is pretty much in the same place. And there are more than one Dvorak layout scheme.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say a Dvorak keyboard, they're not all the same.
But the Dvorak typists all have atrophied pinkies because they don't have to use them for anything really.
Well, except for the A.
Well, okay.
The left pinky. That's another thing I should point out is that the QWERTY keyboard, it favors left-handers, which
really?
Might be another reason why I like it.
Interesting.
Yeah, there are more words that you can type with just your left hand than you can type with your right hand. For instance, I think the longest word that you can type with your left hand is stewardesses.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's a shame now because flight attendants, you can't type with one hand.
I know. I type that word now and I get slapped.
Yeah. It happens.
But anyway, the Dvorak keyboard kind of shifts that a little bit over to the right hand. So the right hand gets a little more weight because, I mean, more people are right-handed than left-handed. So we sinister people are kind of shoved aside yet again, made the social pariahs, forced to learn how to write with our other hand when we're naturally gifted with the left hand.
I'm going to smack you in the hand with a ruler if you type on
only
the wrong hand.
Only with the right hand. If you smack me in the right hand, I'm okay because I'm left-handed. So, but the other, you know, the couple of other issues, like all the vowels in Dvorak's keyboard are on a little row, on the home row on the left hand. So instead of them being spread across the keyboard, they're all located in one little row.
So it's sort of like a great vowel shift.
Yes, it is a great vowel shift.
The three linguists in listening are laughing. Everyone else is confused.
Yeah, everyone else is like,
what?
Huh? I think I might have heard about this in my Shakespeare class. All right, go ahead.
I was just going
what
to.
What was your
Well, I want to make sure before we get to, you know, closing out the Dvorak keyboard,
sure.
I get to make a point.
All right, go ahead and make your point.
I was just going to say that apparently, based on an article I saw in Reason magazine, the Navy study was biased. In general, the Dvorak keyboard is not necessarily more efficient, but it may be more ergonomic. Because okay. A lot of people have said that, people I've read said that it can be a more casual typing style. It can, it's not, you don't have to twist and turn your fingers quite as much.
You don't have quite as many finger gymnastics going on as you would with the QWERTY keyboard.
But I kind of enjoy it. My pinky finger is getting pretty good at the rings.
Yeah. My typing speed on a QWERTY keyboard is about 90 words per minute. It would take me a long time, I think, to get up to that speed with a Dvorak keyboard just from having to learn the new layout. And like Chainsaw, I and some of our other listeners, I'm perfectly comfortable typing without looking at the keys. The idea of having to learn a new keyboard is kind of intimidating to me. But we wanted to talk about a couple of other keyboards as well.
Okay.
Now, you were looking at some keyboards for different languages and regions, right?
Yeah.
Want to talk about that a little bit?
A lot of the keyboards that you find around the world are, if you went to another country, obviously if you went to someplace like China or, Thailand or someplace, you're going to see quite different characters.
Right, like a kanji keyboard would be much different from an English keyboard.
And as you were saying before we started recording, a lot of these require multi-key presses because they're basically using very, very similar layouts. I would assume probably because the manufacturer of keyboards, if you're going to make keyboards for people all around the world, you're going to try to fit the same rough number of keys. It's about 80 to 100, 120 keys.
Yeah. And if you've got a language that has hundreds and hundreds of characters,
Words are Chinese represented by whole characters instead of letters,
then you're going to need some sort of probably a software solution rather than a hardware solution to try and make the equivalent of that in your keyboard. So yeah, you would have to maybe push five or six different keys in succession to create one single character.
But
actually, it's probably less than that because that would be – when I sit there and think about that exponentially, that would be a huge number of characters. It's probably more like two or three.
But it's funny because I was talking to our producer, Tyler, right before we started recording about – the operating system supports other layouts. We were talking about, I've never seen a Dvorak keyboard in the flesh or in the plastic or metal. Yeah,
exactly. Silicon.
But you can easily go and get into your computer's OS settings and change it over, but the letters will still be
different labels. Most current operating systems do support alternate keyboard layouts, and some of them you can even customize it exactly the way you want. You don't even have to necessarily use a standardized layout at all if you really wanted to. And the keys, what will happen is the operating system will map the keys to their new designations. So you might say, I don't want the Q key to be the Q key anymore. I want that to be, Z, because I hardly ever use Z, and it'll be for my little pinky, and I'm going to put that right there. Not that I think you'd use Q that often either, but the point being that you could relocate it, and then when you press it, the operating system maps that press to mean Z.
Sure.
Now, granted, the physical key itself is still going to say Q.
Well, you could, depending on the kind of keyboard you have, you may be able to pry the keys off and replace them.
Right. Always just put stickers on top with new letters on them.
But, you could go, sort of depends on the language. Like you might see, the AZERTY keyboard in France or the, QWERTY keyboard in Germany. And they've got, specific keys for A, O, and U with the umlaut because they're so frequently used.
Right. Whereas we have to like insert a symbol or something like that or do some sort of macro.
You can find keyboards with a strict alphabetical, layout, A, B, C, D, E keyboards.
Yep.
That's what they call those. And then there's the expert keyboard, which is a different layout that was designed in 2003. It's in our article on, keyboards.
Oh yeah.
On the website, so howstuffworks.com.
Yeah, what's the expert keyboard? I haven't read this article.
When I went to the website to learn more about it, it's designed as an alternative to the Dvorak keyboard. It actually has based on the keys that you want to strike and the frequency with which the letters occur. It has two E's, one for each hand. because E appears so frequently.
Interesting.
But it's supposed to, you know, make the key combinations from hand to hand more efficient.
That would definitely make typing I, E, E, E easier.
True. Not that we write about them all that frequently.
No, we just go I, E.
But those are just different keyboard layouts.
Yes.
And we were going to talk about different kinds of keyboards, like the gaming keyboards.
Right. So there are gaming keyboards out there. I really don't have a whole lot to say about them. I mean, they're mainly, they're just really a special kind of control, really, when you get down to it.
Well, it's another way for, it's another way for the keyboard manufacturers to make money.
Yeah. I mean,
here, buy another $80 keyboard.
Some of them are designed in such a way so that it's easier for you to reach certain keys like the W, A, S, and D keys, which are often used in first person shooters and other games for moving your character around.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, on a standard keyboard, it might be a little cramped to put your fingers there. You know, it's just a little weird because especially if you want to be holding down all or have contact with all four keys at the same time,
mm-hmm.
you're going to end up with a cramped hand after about half an hour. So a lot of these keyboards just have a different spacing, and they may be a little more reinforced. Some of them have backlighting, you know, stuff that makes it look a little fancier. In general, they're still very functional keyboards. Some of them may have preset macros where you can have things set up so that pushing one button actually executes a series of commands, which, you know, a lot of games support that, and you can do it on your own with a normal keyboard, but you kind of have to know what you're doing. Some of these kind of take that out of your, you know, out of your hands and do it automatically so you don't have to actually, you know, sit there and follow a set of instructions to program your macros so that you can be elite. I've never had much use for the gaming keyboards that much, but then that's because I'm not a big gamer. If I were, I probably would love one of those.
Mm-hmm, you know,
in general, I've heard good things about them from gamers.
Right.
But since I don't game often enough to be in their esteemed company, it's not something that I've ever invested in.
Yeah.
Now, if we want to talk about a real investment, well, first let's talk about the major investment. Then let's talk about the majorly crazy investment. Major investment would be Optimus Maximus.
Yes, the OLED or OLED keyboard from Art Lebedev.
Yes, it has 113 keys that are each an individual display.
And you want to talk about Dvorak keyboards or mapping keys and pulling them off? You don't have to do it because your keys can be anything you want them to be.
Right,
because
each key is essentially a little, it's a little display. So if you wanted if you suddenly wanted to type in the Cyrillic alphabet, you could tell your keyboard that that's what you want, and suddenly all of your English letters will change to Cyrillic letters.
Yep. And hey, you know, at the bargain price of $15.99 on thinkgeek.com at the moment, they're out of stock.
Yeah. I've seen,
they can't keep
I think
them
the
in.
Lowest I've seen is like $14.57. So we're talking around $1,500 for most places for this keyboard. That's really, really expensive. Now that you might sit there and think like, wow, that's got to be one of the most expensive keyboards out there. But why don't you take a look?
Well, yes, it is one of the most expensive keyboards.
But if you want to talk about a really expensive keyboard, let's talk about Fairlight's Zenergy keyboard.
Mm.
This thing costs $28,000. Now, when it came out, I saw a lot of reports about $28,000 keyboard. And, you know, I actually wrote an article about how the Zenergy keyboard works. And the headlines are a little misleading because you would think, like, who the heck would pay $28,000 for a keyboard? Well, it's not just a keyboard. It's actually part of a comprehensive audio and video engineering center. Okay, so it's more like a really complex audio and video editing device as opposed to just a keyboard. It actually has its own memory. It's got its own screen. Like, there's a screen built into the keyboard. Each key, just like Optimus Maximus, is its own screen. You can even, if you wanted to, display video through your keys. I don't know why you would want to do that, but you could. But you can create animated images on your keys. So like maybe a flashing red light when you're recording something. So one of your keys is flashing red. You know, oh, that means that the record button has been hit. We're actually recording this. Like, I have to ask Tyler all the time, or Matt, or whoever's in here, are we currently recording? Because I kind of need to know if I have to behave myself or not.
Like, that stops you.
Yeah, well, let's just say that we've had people ask us about outtakes. I'm just going to tell you guys right now, we don't really have any outtakes because when we make mistakes, we kind of keep them in the show, pretty much. I mean, some of you have pointed those out. But We do talk before and after the shows, and it's juicy, and I'm sure you guys would all love to hear that, but we don't record those. I specifically request that we turn the recorder off for that. At any rate, so this $28,000 keyboard is really for audio engineers and video engineers. It's not meant for the average consumer. It's not meant for someone playing Doom or Quake or Half-Life 2 or anything like that. It's meant for someone who's producing music videos or albums or whatever, and they need to have essentially a portable studio is what it turns out to be.
Yeah, yeah. Are you done with the Zenergy?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say one other thing. It can record up to 90. It can handle up to 96 channels for the base model. The wow. top of the line model, 230 channels.
Wow.
Okay, so when you think about the Beatles recording their albums on 4 channels,
yep.
Imagine what they'd sound like with 230 channels. That's a lot of Ringo.
Yeah.
So what were you going to say?
I was going to mention another kind of keyboard that's considerably less expensive than that.
Okay.
But, that John Fuller wrote about, the Laser Virtual Keyboard.
Oh, right.
Right. Basically, this isn't a keyboard at all, except it kind of is. It's a device that you can hook up to, a computer or, certain types of other electronic devices that require keyboards. And basically, it uses a laser, and it shines through what's called a diffractive optical element. And with that and lenses, certain kinds of lenses, it projects an image of a keyboard on, say, the desktop in front of you. So in front of you, where there was a blank table, now you see the keys from a keyboard. And an infrared laser diode at the base shines a beam of light parallel to the table surface. So that when you type on, basically you're drumming your fingers on the table in front of you, on the pictures of the select keys, the complementary metal oxide semiconductor, that's CMOS, looks at where your finger is and determines the position relative to where it's supposed to be and says, okay, well, he's typing an S, he's typing a G, he's typing an L. And
what
then
the
it
heck
can
send trying to spell.
Exactly. And you're sending it. Hey, maybe they're just transferring from a Dvorak keyboard layout.
Could be.
Anyway, and it sends that information back to the computer, and the computer is using this virtual keyboard to do that. So, but cool. It's considerably less expensive than the Zenergy. Like, it's $150 or so.
I'm kind of curious how accurate $200. That is.
I don't know.
I would love to try. I've heard people say that it's a neat idea, but that it's kind of weird to use it. I don't know if that means that it's weird in the sense that since you don't have the touch feedback, it just throws you off, or because when you press a button, there's something about that sense. Like, it tells you that you successfully pressed the button before you see it show up on the screen.
Thank you for the segue.
What's that?
One of the oddest things. I don't think it's really that odd, but I think it's sort of odd that. One of the keyboards that's really, really popular. Do you remember those IBM keyboards that they used to make, the old beige things? And when you would hear somebody
ones?
And they would be really, really loud.
Yeah.
They had these really heavy duty switches in them,
right,
which made that loud noise. There are people who absolutely love those things. They're buying them refurbished. And there's another company that's coming out with the same thing called, the DOS keyboard.
So it's specifically loud and clacky on purpose.
It is specifically loud and clacky on purpose, so you press that key.
Well, I mean,
it is not, a thin, rubbery membrane keyboard. It is a big, thick, plastic, chunky thing with a huge switch inside that clacks when you hit it.
Well, again, for those of us who can type while looking away from the screen, like often I'll have someone come up and talk to me, and I'll be in the middle of typing a sentence, and I'll turn around and I'll look at them while I'm still typing, which tends to throw them off for some reason. Apparently that's creepy in some way. I never really thought of it that way. But yeah, that could come in handy because you could realize that, hey, I didn't actually hit that E when I thought I hit the E. Now, granted, with a lot of autocorrect software, sometimes that's not really necessary unless your autocorrect software is awful and keeps on putting in words that you totally didn't mean to have in there, which does happen and is hilarious. I am finished with keyboards.
I think we are.
Okay, well, then let's do a little quick listener mail.
Okay.
This listener mail comes from Adrian, and Adrian has this to say. Hey guys, love your podcast. I'm planning to buy a computer, but I want to know when Windows might be releasing their latest operating system. Would you guys know when it might be out? Thank you so much.
Next week.
Actually, it's October 22nd. is the official release date, which by the time you hear this may have been last week. We don't know when our podcast will be released, but a lot of people have asked us this, so there's a chance that it's already in stores now by the time you hear this. But October 22nd was the official release date. Thanks, Adrian. And if any of you have any questions, concerns, criticisms, podcast suggestions, you can write us. Our email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. I do want to say that we talked about the inventor of the QWERTY keyboard. We have a special podcast, The Stuff of Genius, that has an episode all about him.
Indeed.
So you should watch that. Stuff of Genius is absolutely brilliant. Very funny animation.
Totally
great,
awesome.
Great text. Yeah, you guys got to check that out. And remember also, at 1 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, Chris and I host a live hootenanny. A live technology news podcast show. It's Tech Stuff Live.
It's vaguely like a hootenanny.
Yeah, you can find all about this hootenanny at our blogs. So go to howstuffworks.com and check it out. Crispy and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the new Tech Stuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.